Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. Got my mojo
working, but just don't worry. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to take a look at melatonin and how it can help your children get rid of eczema, a new study from Taipei City Hospital. Then we're going to look at the link between physical activity and better memory from Boston University Medical Center. We're also going to explore tackling toxins. How do we get rid of those pesky bacteria that we don't want in our body, Western Ontario University. Then we're going to take a look at how supplements can improve teenage behavior in school, Oxford University, and much more on health and healing. We're also going to take a look at the TTIP treaty. It's entering its final stages, and it will simply dismantle democracy. And we'll tell you about that. Also, I'm going to give you a little more that I didn't have time for yesterday on the Clintons. Remember, you're getting them as a tag team. Better know what you're getting. And for all of you who thought, well, we need her. Well, what about the people who ended up having her on the other end of a coup? And that's Honduras. Dennis Bernstein will share some insight on that. Also today, we have an alarming number of people who are poor. And how many people right now are in debtors' prisons? Now, these are not people who've committed any felonies. These are just people who are too poor when they went into court to pay maybe a traffic ticket, maybe a loitering, maybe a loitering, or maybe a jaywalking. You won't believe the numbers. Well, if they're too poor to pay the bill, what do you think happens when they're then put into a private jail, charged an enormous fee per day to be there? They then have to get out and go before a private judge and pay. And then the judge assigns them a probation officer. And if they don't pay those bills, they're remanded right back to jail. And it starts all over again with compounding interest. We thought we outlawed debtors' prisons. Not so much. I'll explain that. Also today, I think it's time that we understood that we, the people, have a right to speak out. Now, we all have voices, but do we use them in a way that can project our thoughts and feelings about what we believe concerns us? Not everyone will be able to share something in an articulate way. Some will be angry. But shouldn't we honor freedom of speech, even if we find how it may at times be delivered offensive? We'll have a discussion on that, and I'll open that up for our talkback segment. Also today, a little clip. It's only 40 seconds long, but in the middle of it, Hillary Clinton tells you exactly what you need to know about her position on GMOs. You got to listen, because this is she's doing this on the campaign stump. Oh, and did we forget? She brought in one of the top people at Monsanto to run her campaign. Also today, if time permits, we're going to explore how bad vaccines were from the beginning in the United States from the man who actually invented them. In his own words, we're going to hear from Dr. Maurice Hillman, who worked at Merck. And then Robert Reich on the Coke machine. And they're in full gear. They're spending tremendous amounts of money to get their slate elected. How does that impact our democratic principles? So you see, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Oh, and keep in mind, please, everyone right now, write down this number if you listen to our sister station, WBAI in New York, because there is a possibility that based upon events that are unfolding as I speak, that there may be the effort to remove this program. And if that happens, we will inform you on our regular program where I broadcast every day from the Progressive Radio Network of what's behind it, who's behind it, and more. The number you can listen live over the telephone, write it down, please, 712-775-6850. 712-775-6850. Let's begin. Melatonin historically has been used for people to get a better night's sleep, and it works. It also is a really good anti-cancer nutrient, one of many, and is a part of an overall protocol. But according to Taipei City Hospital in Taiwan, children with the skin condition eczema often have trouble sleeping. Now, new studies suggest that over-the-counter melatonin can allow them a better night's sleep, and eczema is also called atopic dermatitis, and it's generally itchy and red. It's a rash. It affects almost 30% of the kids in America, and they, in turn, experience a high degree of sleep difficulties. And these sleep problems can be difficult to treat in these children. So by giving them just melatonin, quote from the study, is safe and effective for helping children with atopic dermatitis fall asleep faster. So that's good. And otherwise, the kids don't get a good night's sleep, and then they don't function as well the next day. We know we should be more active. We know that as a society, most people are not getting up and moving about and doing aerobic exercise or resistance exercises on a regular basis. But you should. And I'm going to share an article from the Journal of the International Neuropsychological Society as to why. This was done at Boston University's Medical Center. I'll quote it. Could staying physically active improve quality of life by delaying cognitive decline and prolonging an independent lifestyle? A new study has found that older adults who take more steps, either walking, jogging, perform better on memory tasks than those who are more sedentary. Well, that's terrific. So keep in mind, it's true for people of all ages. The more you exercise, and especially aerobically, the lower your body overall weight will be towards your normal ideal weight, the less body fat you'll have, the better your circulation, the better the feel-good hormones, the endorphins, and also the better cleansing out of the liver and the kidneys. So it's just good on all levels. So I suggest getting up to 1 hour of aerobic exercise 6 days a week. And working out with weights or resistance exercises 3 to 4 days a week. Now, we all have accumulated toxins in our body. But getting rid of them can make an enormous difference in helping your overall metabolism, your brain, in your organs. Western Ontario University has a study done at the Lawson Health Research Institute, and they talked about how having probiotics in yogurt provides mercury detoxification. Well, when you consider how much mercury people consume, and we're getting ethyl mercury and methyl mercury. We're getting it from the food we eat, and we're getting it from mercury fillings in the teeth and from the flu vaccines. We have a lot of mercury, and mercury is a real bad neurotoxin. It interferes in enzyme systems. It can adversely affect the heart. So by having good probiotics, that leads to detoxification of mercury. And they're suggesting here, and arsenic as well, they're suggesting probiotic in yogurt. However, you can have probiotics in non-dairy. You could have just probiotics by themselves. I suggest between 2 to 10 billion, with a B, billion, probiotics a day, unless you suffer from, let's say, autism spectrum disorder, in which case I would probably suggest twice a day, 10 to 20 billion. because rebuilding the intestine is terrific for you, because the bacteria in your intestine directly impact the quality of your immune system. Also, from Oxford University, a study that shows that supplements can improve teenage behavior in school. I'll quote this directly from the University of Oxford. Giving nutritional supplements to teenagers may improve behavior in schools. The researchers gave 196 typically developing 13 to 16-year-olds one tablet containing multiple vitamins and minerals and a daily dose of the omega-3 fatty acids and or a placebo for 12 weeks. They saw a deterioration in behavior of children with low baseline rates of disciplinary infringements, but an improvement for children who had high baseline rates. So here's what it means in lay language. And this was published in the British Journal of Nutrition. Giving your children nutrients and a healthy diet can make an enormous difference. I did a clinical study on lifestyle and behavior. All the children with their parents in the study had a bad diet. We shifted over to a completely healthy diet, lots of juices and no fried foods, no caffeine, no sugar, no artificial sweetener, no gluten. And it was difficult for some of the children because when they're autistic, they get into repetitive patterns. They'll only eat certain things. But by disguising the nutrients in shakes and smoothies, with a heavy emphasis upon folic acid methylated, B12 methylated, and probiotics, and then B-complex, and then specific nutrients for the brain. For example, chlorella and spirulina and wheatgrass that can help chelate out mercury, and then rejuvenating brain cells, like PPQ for the mitochondria, and then using simple meditation techniques and meditation music, even putting lavender drops, 3 drops of lavender essential oil on the pillow. It made all the difference in the world. One father's New York City cab driver told me, he said, I never thought it was possible because we were told that it wouldn't make any difference. The child was too far damaged and he's like a new person. So they were right in this study about multiple nutrients. But they did not know from reading the study about B12, folic acid, and probiotics. And that would have done a lot of good as well. Plus, R-alpha-lipoic acid, L-glutamine, grapeseed extract, resveratrol, D-glycerol, phosphorylcholine, acetyl-L-choline, acetyl-L-carnitine, all these wonderful nutrients that can impact the brain. And finally, tart cherry concentrate can combat post-exercise oxidation and inflammation. Here's what it says, and this was published in the journal Nutrients. This is the Montmorency tart cherry concentrate. I would say maybe a tablespoon, and it can help reduce markers of inflammation and oxidative stress. But it's also really good for separate from exercising. It reduces the bad C-reactive protein, and it lowers your interleukin-6, which is pro-inflammatory. And it helps you if you have joint problems like arthritis. And this study was done at multiple universities, including University of Ulster, that's in Northern Ireland, and University of Stirling, that's in Scotland, and Northumbria University, which is in England. Quote, this is the first study to investigate the impact of Montmorency cherries on systemic inflammatory and oxidative stress induced by a series of metabolically challenging cycling bouts. That's bicycling. And it made a big difference. So for all of the athletes in this audience, this can make a difference and help you. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
dirty shame that we can't work it out. No, not this time.
Also, commentaries by John W. Whitehead from Countercurrents and others. And we're going to go to Richard Gale in just a moment, because Richard, who is one of our scholars in residence and understands the sciences, has taken the place of Dr. Shaw today, who was not available, to describe why Dr. Shaw's work is so important and why we should pay attention to it, especially those who believe that the Gardasil vaccine may not be safe, as we're led to believe. But I just want to take a moment to share some insights, my own, and I sit at night thinking of the issues that I believe we should discuss, or at least know more about, as well as John W. Whitehead, and that is our freedom of speech. Why? Because I am not seeing the people who should be protesting and writing or going to demonstrations or in city council meetings or showing up their state or federal legislators' offices and providing their insights. Now, you're talking about people who have problems, and we are beset right now with a lot of problems. Let me give you an example. As of today, 80% of Americans are in debt. That's 80. And 44% of that is mortgage debts. So in a society where the legislators and the executive, the president, cared about its citizens, what would you do? You would do two things if you were reasonable and responsible. First, you would put a moratorium on all home foreclosures. You would no longer bail out the banks that gave those mortgages. Instead, you would forgive all interest debt. You would turn off that clock completely. You would then allow a person to stay in their home and give them a 15% payment they would have. So even if they were on unemployment or welfare, you're only taking 15% of that applied towards their principal. You would also equalize the market, meaning you would bring the value of the property to the value of the mortgage. Because right now, people's mortgages are higher than the value of the property. That means you have a mortgage of $200,000, but your house is only worth $100,000. That is not going to come back unless there's a bubble. But it was a bubble that caused the problem to begin with. And both the persons buying the house must hold responsibility for that as well, because no one put a gun to their head and says, sign this liar's loan. You have to sign that you're making $300,000 a year so we can afford this $500,000 home for you rather than the $43,000 you're making. So it was a responsibility for both the mortgage broker, who is making a profit, the bankers are making a profit, but the buyer as well. And it's unfortunate that we should look the other way and say anyone who created any problems for themselves are not responsible. Well, then how as a society or individually are we to ever grow if we cannot honor our poor choices and learn the lesson of them? So that way it stops the people from being underwater and just walking away from their home. It allows them a place to stay, which helps the neighborhood, reduces crime, and then you go one step further. In every major community in the United States, rural, urban, or suburban, you open up centers that are there as crisis centers to help people in need. So when people need counseling, when people need, what do I do now? There's no more jobs with my talents, and I don't have the money to go where there might be jobs, and I don't know where there are jobs. There would be people who, on an international network of experts, including retirees, who could then go online and contribute their wonderful lifetime of insight to helping people say, well, here's something you could consider. Have you thought about doing this or that or the other? And therefore, you could pull millions of people who would then be able to be on conference calls and webinar calls and Skype calls, helping people to get out of depression, to get out of debt, and reclaim their life. That's something that would take a group of people willing to work together. But you've got 80% of the population who need help. You also have 64 million people, as of today, who cannot pay all their medical bills. Well, then the question is twofold. Why are medical procedures so expensive? And should we have a double system? Should we have a for-profit medical system and for-profit insurance for that system? So if you want to go and have a luxurious suite so you can have your baby, you have the right. But should we not also have a universal healthcare system where no matter how poor you are, you cannot be turned away and you will get the finest quality medical procedures done to save your life or help you? So this way, no one is going to end up having their life hampered by medical debt. And I believe that we should take the profit out of healing. I believe that people should earn a decent living. And I believe that all doctors should have their, if they're willing to work under a nonprofit system, should have all their college and educational debt forgiven. Meaning, you're going to work for us, and let's say we cap it at $200,000 or $300,000 a year, maybe on a graduating scale, that $1 million in medical loans you had and internship and residency and all that sacrifice you did, we're going to pay it. So there has to be a cooperative understanding, because unless you're in a doctor's shoes and you know how much they sacrificed, how stressful it was, how much they spent, and how tough it is for many professions today in medicine, especially general practitioners and internists, it's just two examples, then you can't appreciate why doctors leaving medicine. We should also, while we're at it, take away all of the liability for malpractice. I actually had a medical doctor come to me for counseling, and when I was talking with this person, I said, why are you leaving medicine? The person said, because I can't afford my malpractice insurance anymore. You've got a highly litigious society. They'll sue you for anything, so it forces doctors to do extra tests that the patient doesn't need, to give them extra treatment they don't need, so that in case you're ever sitting in a deposition, the lawyer for the plaintiff says, didn't you do that test or didn't you give that drug? Then you have to, but it's hurting the patient, not helping them, and I can't be a part of that system. Why not have no-fault malpractice where you can't get big million-dollar judgments, but you can't sue the doctor, the nurse, or the hospital? What happens is if you have a legitimate injury, your treatment is paid for. If you lose work, then what you would have made during that work you're losing is paid for. Therefore, you're compensated. You've lost nothing. But it's not a big payday either. And we have to look at that. And then you have the hospitals and the medical system itself build in 1% of its revenues, which would cover all that. You take away defensive medicine, you've just saved about $400 billion a year in unnecessary tests and treatment. And then you look at the average person's debt. The average household today is holding $129,000 in debt and $15,000 in credit card debt. Now, mind you, because credit cards make their money when you don't pay the full amount due, you only pay partial. Then another interest rate kicks in. Are you aware it can also kick in on other credit cards you have? You didn't know that? Check that out. You're paying one credit card on time. You don't pay one, and suddenly you find your other credit cards impacted. And then look at the younger people paying $6,600 a year in just in interest, and that is a high percentage of the average household's expenses. Who makes that interest? The credit card companies and the banks. But aren't they getting all their money for free? Yes. And didn't they accumulate trillions of dollars in debt at no interest to them? That's also true. So why can't they pass that on to the consumer? That's not the way the system works. That's why the system has to be changed. 33% of all millennials, according to the Pew Charitable, have home loans. 41% have student debt loans. 41% have car loan debts. And 39% have credit card debts. Now, how many have all those? You have a car, you have student loan, you have credit card, and you have a mortgage. Exactly how are they ever supposed to get out of that debt? They won't. And that's why we need to have a different system where that is considered, and those that is relieved, all student debt should be relieved and start fresh. The unfortunate part is that we do not hear the students who have that debt, those who had a payday loan and are paying 1,000% interest and will never pay it off. They just keep getting rebooted every month, going back to the same place that rolls it over with higher interest. We don't hear about all the service people coming home with Gulf War Syndrome. By the way, I have a new article on Gulf War Syndrome, a 30-year legacy showing the truth of Gulf War Syndrome. And they should be helped. How can you expect someone who comes home who is suffering from both physical abnormalities from the experimental vaccines and post-traumatic stress disorder, and there are few jobs, and many people won't hire you if you're an ex-vet? We have nothing that we do for them. We should. But they should be also speaking out. So what we have is we have so many individuals who do not have advocates, who do not have a voice. And that means that we are not telling the government or corporate America or the media what we think. Free speech is not for the faint of heart, nor is it for those who are easily offended or readily intimidated or who need everything wrapped in a neat and tidy bow. Free speech is often messy and foul-mouthed and obscene and intolerant and undignified and insensitive and cantankerous and bawdy and volatile. Unfortunately, our appreciation for a robust freedom of speech has worn thin over the years. Many Americans, according to John Whitehead, have become fearfully polite, careful to avoid offense, and largely unwilling to be labeled intolerant, hateful, close-minded, or any of the other toxic labels that carry a badge of shame today that keep people quiet. We've come to prize civility over freedom. Most of all, too many Americans held hostage by their screen devices and the talking heads on television have lost the ability to think critically. We expect someone else to do it for us. Societies that cherish free speech relish open debates and controversy, and in turn produce a robust citizenry who will stand against authoritarian government. Indeed, oppressive regimes of the past have understood the value of closed-mouthed, closed-minded citizens and the power inherent in controlling speech and thus controlling how a people view their society and government. We in the United States have a government with a ravenous appetite for power and a seeming desire to turn the two-way dialogue that is our constitutional republic into a one-way dictatorship. Emboldened by phrases such as hate crimes, bullying, and extremism, and microaggressions, the government is whittling away at free speech, confining it to carefully constructed free speech zones, criminalizing if it skates too close to challenging the status quo, shaming it when it butts up against the political correct ideals, and muzzles it when it appears dangerous. So, free speech is no longer free. Nor is free speech still considered an inalienable right or an essential liberty, even by those government entities entrusted with protecting it. Consider some of the kinds of speech being targeted for censorship or outright elimination. Offensive, politically incorrect, and unsafe speech, disguised as tolerance, civility, and love. Political correctness has resulted in the chilling of free speech and the demonization of viewpoints that run counter to the cultural elite. Consequently, college campuses have become hotbeds of student-led censorship, triggered warnings and microaggressions, and what is called red light speech policies, meaning anything that you should say that might cause a student to feel uncomfortable or feel offended, then you no longer are tolerated for your speech. Now, we now look at what we call intimidating speech. And they say we need to control all that speech. That's what the Justice Department says. Well, then are you going to classify teasing as a form of bullying or being rude as cyberbullying? They will. And they believe that anything that you say that they have chosen, like Google or Twitter or Facebook, to delete because it offends someone. Well, shouldn't the truth offend everyone who has embraced the lie? So dare we not tell the truth for the offense of making someone who has accepted the lie feel uncomfortable with the truth? How ironic. The upshot of all this editing, parsing, banning, and silencing is the emergence of a new language, what George Orwell referred to as newspeak, which places the power to control language in the hands of the totalitarian state. Under such a system, language becomes a weapon to change the way people think by changing the words they use. The end result is control. In totalitarian regimes, meaning a police state, where conformity and compliance are enforced at the end of a loaded gun, the government dictates what words can and cannot be used. In countries where the police state hides behind a benevolent mask and disguises itself as tolerance, the citizens censor themselves, policing their own words and thoughts to conform to the dictates of the mass mind, lest they find themselves ostracized or placed under surveillance. Even when the motives behind this rigidly calibrated reorientation of societal language appear well-intentioned, it's good intent to discourage racism and condemning violence and denouncing discrimination and hatred. But the other end of that is that you become a society of intolerance, indoctrination, and infantilism. Thus, while on paper we are technically still free to speak, the reality is anyone today in America who speaks any word, any utterance, no matter how mild or tempered, that criticizes anything the government does or corporate America does, you are on their enemies list. And that's unfortunate. What we have instead today is regulated, controlled speech, and that is harmful to all of us, and we should pay careful attention to that. Because when they start stifling and smothering dissent, then we become cowards. We self-censor. Remember, the First Amendment is a steam valve. It allows people to speak their minds, air their grievances, and contribute to a larger dialogue that hopefully results in a more just world. Where there is no steam, there's going to be enormous pressure building. Frustration, anger, rage. That is volatile. That's from desperate people. And they will force that valve off. And I predict that's going to happen in the not too far future in the United States, when people find their voice, find the courage, and understand that what was once an important document, the Constitution, has been completely destroyed. I'm Gary Nall. Your thoughts, time to talk back. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now let's go over and say hello to Richard Gale, who is standing by. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good. Richard, explain to the audience why this new discovery is so important, why the media has not touched it and will not touch it, and why people who are concerned about having received the Gardasil vaccine and seen injuries and then had their doctor say, well, it couldn't have been the vaccine, or those contemplating receiving the Gardasil vaccine and are questioning, is it really as safe as we've been led to believe? This is important information for them. Show us what you have discovered, please.
Yes, and we're referring to yesterday's guest, Dr. Xinhuang Li, very prominent pathologist, taught at Yale and McGill universities. But he apparently it was pretty esoteric for the average audience, and so we wanted to come on to just kind of clarify what he was trying to present. And I think what he's uncovered is important on several issues. One is, I think, to look at the charges he has against the World Health Organization and the Global Advisory Committee on Vaccine Safety, which I'll touch on in a moment, concerns Japan. And when I was reflecting on this, this is kind of significant because Japan has one of the worst fertility rates in the world today in the younger generation, and it has a rapidly aging older generation. What Japan did about 3 years ago was it withdrew the HPV, the Gardasil vaccine and Cervarix vaccines, because it was witnessing a lot of girls, hundreds of girls that were having adverse effects, both mild and serious. But it was also very concerned whether the vaccine has really been tested for safety and whether it may be contributing to this very high infertility rate. And we know even in American younger generation, the infertility rate is increasing as well. So I think that's significant, that the government withdrew the Gardasil vaccine until more research could be done by the Japanese Health Ministry. And this required that the World Health Organization, which recommends and is supported by Big Pharma, gives the recommendations of for vaccines, international vaccine schedules. They have this supposedly an independent advisory group, the Global Advisory Committee on Vaccine Safety. These are not WHO employees. This is supposed to be a group of experts and researchers with one mandate alone, and that is to determine the causal relationships between vaccines or vaccine ingredients with adverse effects. That's what they're mandated to. One of the big problems that Dr. Li discovered was we don't know who's on this thing. It's basically a secret committee. Of independence, but we don't know who those independents are. I'll touch on that in a second. We saw this before with the swine flu vaccine, when the World Health Organization was saying all these millions of people would die and go out and get your swine flu vaccine. And again, that was this vaccine panel of individuals. We don't know who they are. Okay, so that's one thing that Dr. Li was able to bring out. The other thing he did, this report has gone, it has burgeoned throughout the independent media about Dr. Li's findings. So it's even though the mainstream media is not touching it, it's gone viral in other ways. And I think that's significant because so often a lot of more arcane, esoteric medical discoveries just get buried in the scientific literature, and they never come to the day of light. And we never end other independent people looking at this material, whether it's vaccine safety or efficacy. We have to dig to try to find some of this stuff. And so what Dr. Li's own findings were are some of this esoteric kind of arcane thing. What he basically, he's the individual who discovered that the HPV vaccines, Gardasil and Cervarix, contain DNA fragments. And this one in particular, the HPV-L1 gene. Now, this was confirmed by the FDA. The FDA has confirmed this contamination. All right? And that he was saying, as a pathologist who has looked at numerous lab samples and found in 100% of lab samples that this HPV DNA fragment was present, and in one case of a postmortem of tissue of blood and some, I can't remember one of the tissues, found the presence of this fragment.
And why is that important, Richard?
Because this particular fragment binds with the aluminum adjuvant that is used in vaccines and in the HPV vaccine. Now, this is a little more esoteric, but what happens is when there are these binding properties that happen between DNA fragments and other ingredients, very often a metal, there's something that's created called a non-bDNA conformation, all right? This non-bDNA conformation was discovered 40, 50 years ago. There's a lot of research, bodies of research on non-bDNA conformations, and there are about 70 known serious diseases that have been associated with them, particularly with genetic abnormalities and mutations. He discovered that there is this relationship between this HPV fragment, DNA fragment, and the aluminum has created a non-bDNA conformation of a new chemical never known before. We don't even know the toxicity of this particular chemical. Okay, and so in a sense, this may contribute to why it is that there are many cases that HPV vaccine people that receive the HPV Gardasil vaccine are actually coming down with cervical cancer later. Right, it's creating genetic abnormalities. And what this committee did was try, and through Freedom of Information Act and his review of all the correspondence, was that they were trying to cover, they knew of this, but they were trying to cover it up because they were mandated to present to the Japanese Health Ministry in their review. So that's really why this information that he got was important. It was, and I think one other significant thing that I noted in this was that, and I read this in one of the emails between the internal emails on how they were going to present their review to show that the Gardasil is safe, was that they turned to David Gorski, of all people, as an expert. Now, David Gorski is a surgical oncologist who is, and you and I, we know, I mean, he's written...
Okay, hold on. He's not here to defend himself. And my policy is do not challenge him until he can be here to respond to the challenge.
Okay, well, you can look at his own blogs and what he writes about you and me and everybody else. But
it doesn't matter. I would hold the same standard for my enemies.
Okay, but as I was saying, he's a surgical oncologist. He's not an expert in immunology nor infectious disease whatsoever. And they were relying on his evaluation of Dr. Lee's, Dr. Shaw's, Dr. Tomlinovich's research showing the dangers of this HPV fragment bound with aluminum that was causing cerebral vasculitis and creating, you know, where girls were going unconscious or having seizures and in some cases death, as in the two New Zealand girls whose brain tissues were provided to the University of British Columbia for analysis and found that this combination was causing hemorrhaging in the brain tissue of the girls that died from the Gardasil vaccine.
Richard, this is a very important discovery, and I appreciate you articulating it. I believe it is now up to the parents of the damaged children, of which there are tens of thousands, to start lawyering up. I believe that it's time now for class action lawsuits, especially as we can show cover-ups, we can show bad science, and we can show what they were not telling us about when these adjuvants like mercury combine with some of this foreign matter DNA, causing all forms of DNA anomalies, which can lead to serious consequences. That is the truth of it. And now consider California and other states have mandated this, and that means that parents don't have a choice. They have to have their kids given these three injections. And I would rather, if it were me, I would take my kid out of school. I'd never put my kid's life at risk, and all for profit and politics. This has nothing to do with preventing cervical cancer, as we've already written extensively. By the way, Richard Gell and I have completed over 39 articles, most of which are on vaccines, in just the last 3 years, talking about this, including the Gardasil. You can go to the website and read up on these. These are all fully documented. Richard, thank you for being on today.
Thank you, Gary.
Now, we're going to say hello to Matt, because I wanted to get a feedback from someone in there about our eroding freedom of speech. Hi, Matt. It's your turn.
Yes. Actually, it's my act, the Egyptian principle of right, balance, and justice. Gary, I want to connect this idea, and that was very interesting commentary by Richard. I hope you follow up so that people can understand what Guillain-Barré or Barre is, in terms of, if you don't die, what a horrible disease many of the young ladies and even the boys are encouraging to get it gets. But I want to connect this issue of free speech and Whitehead's work and others to your program on Monday, Martin Luther King Day. I think that was astounding. I think the way you analyzed gave us a true view, as it were, of the legal system, the fraud of the courts and across the board. And I'm wondering, the question I have is whether there are transcripts of your programs. I know in the digital age, everyone is so orderly oriented, and I'm looking forward to the April 4th follow-up. It's astounding information with William Pepper, and I'm looking to get his forthcoming books.
Thank All right. So first, I don't keep transcripts. However, there is a simple, inexpensive add-on to your computer that can take any program and turn it into a transcript, and even a scan as well. To the larger issue, we are working diligently on the April 4th press conference. Right now it looks like it'll be 2 hours. People that no one, I mean no one in America, except their immediate families, had any knowledge about will be appearing, who have first-person eyewitness of what actually happened. We will be, in effect, challenging the official narrative on the day of Martin Luther King's death. We have taken every reasonable precaution for these people's well-being, because we believe, and again, this is my personal belief, and it's Mr. Pepper's personal belief, that there will be an effort to silence anyone who could reveal this, and I cannot say more than that, because of not wanting to prematurely leak anything. They don't know what we're going to say, and we don't intend to, and we have not communicated on the phone or computers, because we believe that that is also a vulnerable place. But very shortly, you will hear that. Thank you very much for your call. Now, to those who, I just want to mention real quick, and we have Lou Ann Panessi on the line. I want you to hear something. Here's a person that was given up for life. Listen to what he has to say.
Ms. Manuel, I just spent a week with Gary's retreat. I came here with feelings of gratitude, tears of gratitude, because I had been wanting to come for many, many years. I listened to Gary's radio show, and I bought most of his products, which I enjoy. But this has been an experience that I never expected. I have my myeloma, and I came here to experience something different. And I learned to really think positive. I thought I was talking positive, but I really wasn't. The lectures were tremendously helpful to me, that I can do anything that I want to do. That's the main thing that I got. The food was excellent, and I slept well, and I feel I'm getting better. I feel that my life is going to turn around permanently. I also had energy healing, where my legs swole up. Yeah. The energy did something for me. That's all I can say. Thank you.
Could you give us a little background on this gentleman, please?
Yes, this is a gentleman who was in hospice care, Gary. He was
left to die. And he said, you know, my dream would be to come to one of Gary's retreats. And he had a friend who worked with him to get him down there. And he got down there. And he participated. He came down thinking that he might just die a little more peacefully. And he ended up leaving with a whole new lease on life. He was walking around the track when he left, all the swelling in his legs that he came with. He could hardly walk. He had a cane. And by the third day, he was not using a cane. And by the fourth day, all the swelling in his legs had but disappeared. So for him to witness this, these are the kinds of things that happen. People themselves to a place where there is just additional love, there's beauty, there's great food, and there's positive energy. So he was at a transition place in his life. And those are the people that look for to come and experience what a retreat is about. It's not a vacation. It's not a resort. It's a place where people can reconnect with their souls, with who they are and what they're supposed to be doing on the planet. And this gentleman left realizing that he had some more things to do, and he wasn't ready to throw in the towel. He had a lot more living to do. So we have a deep respect for Manuel, and it was a privilege for us to be part of his journey.
Well, it's always enjoyable when you see someone who's literally in a hospice waiting to die and who turns it around. Now he's regaining life, and that's a very uplifting feeling. We're going to do a retreat. I only try to do one retreat per year now because of my schedule. And WBAI, the station development director, Andrea Katz, called and said, "We're desperate. We don't have funds. But if you do a retreat, it would make an enormous difference because it could infuse thousands, tens of thousands of dollars." So I said, "All right, we will do it." So we're going to do it on April 17th for a week, in a beautiful environment, pristine, natural, the mineral waters that you drink and bathe in, and the food, the gourmet organic foods, and the workshops, the counseling, everything. It's just communing in the butterfly room with the butterflies, monarchs, and it's just spectacular. So if you want to join us, and again, this is to help WBAI in New York, then give Luann a call. Luann, you want to give your number, please?
Surely. It's 631-504-6198. Again, 631-504-6198. Just leave your name and your phone number and say, "I'm interested in coming to the retreat." I've been interviewing people, so be patient. I will get back to every single person who calls. And it's not for everyone, Gary. Some people come with an agenda. Some people come with their defenses. Some people are just negative, angry, critical people. And this isn't that kind of a setting. This is for people that are ready to make positive changes in their lives and let go of old behaviors and beliefs and values that no longer serve them. So I interview everybody. So the people that are actually going to come are going to be those people with this positive energy, getting ready to take the next step in their lives.
Thank you, Lily. So give the number once more.
631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. Give a call, and I will look forward to speaking with you.
Thank you. Now, before we end, I'm going to play a clip from Hillary Clinton. It's a short clip, and then I'll do a comment why you got to really listen to what she's saying, because it's her whole program. Also, I just want to mention that we got a temporary assistant position, paying position, for people who want to do data entry. You can call Phil. I'll give you the number, 646-926-5440. And then we have some other positions, including full-time positions, and you can call Jason if you have background in computers and are one of those wonderfully geeky people. We're going to hire a couple. 646-926-5429. 646-926-5429. And so those are what we're hiring. Also tonight on the Progressive Commentary Hour, wow, in my personal opinion, the finest medical scientific editor ever from the Sunday Times London, Neville Hodgson, and also John Lawrenson, two journalists who have something really important to say on the subject of AIDS at 7 o'clock. Now let's listen to Hillary Clinton giving a talk, and about 40 seconds in is where she makes the key statement. Listen carefully.
This doesn't get solved overnight. You have to be working at the top with departments of agriculture and finance ministries and prime ministers and president's offices, and you have to be working from the bottom up. I don't see any shortcut for it, and I think that if we were to try to link aid, for example, or trade to governments passing laws to be more open or just eliminating by fiat their concerns, that would backfire. So it's a painstaking, almost farmer by farmer, government by government effort. But we certainly tried to change the calculation so that people understood better what we were talking about. I mean, genetically modified sounds Frankensteinish. Drought resistance sounds really something you want. So how do you create a different vocabulary to talk about what it is you're trying to help people do? And that I would urge the association and companies working in this area to really try to be more thoughtful about so that you don't raise that red flag immediately.
So there it is. Listen carefully to what you're saying. First, it's an out-and-out lie. Her State Department, under her, based upon cables from WikiLeaks, shows that the State Department's official policy was to pressure every country to take in genetically engineered foods and seeds. And if not, there would be repercussions. So we found that out. So they were, in effect, blackmailing countries all over the world. You take GMOs or else you won't get aid or something. Separately, doesn't anyone thinking of genetically modified foods as frankenfoods are dangerous. So she wants to change the vocabulary to drought resistant or things such as that. These are all the talking points from Monsanto. Oh, did we forget her campaign manager is from Monsanto? And she was a lawyer representing not just Walmart, but I believe at one time Monsanto. So here we have the pro-GMO person who wants to work with our Department of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, pro-GMO, and to make sure that Americans don't have labeling of food as to whether it's GMO or not. And she is promoting a full-out effort for pro-GMO. So remember, a vote for Hillary is a vote for genetically modified organisms. And to conclude today, when it comes to the Clintons, remember, you're getting them as a package. They're going to co-lead the country. But Bill Clinton has built a $2 billion in assets from phony anti-poverty and health initiatives through his foundation of cronies. Go back and look at the Waco incident. That was under Bill Clinton. Everything you found out about Waco was a lie, as it would later turn out. The Clintons were engaged in commodity trading and cattle future and made 1,000% profit, unheard of. And during Clinton's own White House efforts to reform health care, Hillary Clinton spearheaded the task force, which was held completely in secret with private pharmaceutical industries, hospital associations, and insurance companies. And we exposed it at the time, and a lot of us got together, and it was defeated. Clinton sold seats on Commerce Department international trade missions in return for Clinton's 1996 election contributions. The scheme was what Ron Brown opposed when he died in a crash on a mission to Croatia. Bill rented out the Lincoln bedroom in the White House to over 800 people, gained $5.4 million that went for his contributions to his campaign. He appointed an Indonesia friend, an industrialist, as Deputy Secretary of Commerce in 1993 and went on to the DNC and then funneled hundreds of thousands of dollars from foreign sources to Clinton's campaign. And very egregious, and it should be to everyone in this audience, is our current prison system is due to Bill Clinton. It's his. And he was responsible for mass incarceration with his 1994 federal crime three strikes law leading to life sentences, and this set the national mood to start tossing everyone in prison. And his welfare reform bill devastated millions of people. His Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Reconciliation Act of 1996 basically took it from Newt Gingrich's playbook. This also set the tone for the GOP trying to scrape all welfare. And that happened under Bill Clinton. Clinton was Wall Street's deregulator-in-chief, outdoing the GOP. In addition to repealing the Glass-Steagall Act, he also gutted the state regulation of banks, leading to banking mergers. And he reappointed Alan Greenspan to the Federal Reserve chairmanship. The Columbia Journal of Review wrote, Clinton was, quote, responsible for more damaging financial deregulation and thus for the 2008 financial crisis more than any other president. His trade bills allowed for the first time that corporations had the power to challenge local laws that protect health and safety if they cut into profits. He sponsored GATT and NAFTA and the World Trade Organization. He did so much. Clinton expanded the laws on drugs, making it that if you even just used drugs, you were sent to prison. And he ran on a platform, and also he put more people in prison for drugs than any other president in American history. And under Clinton, federal prison spending jumped 171%, while public housing declined 61%. Over $1 billion shifted from education to prisons. That was Bill Clinton saying thank you to his friends. And Clinton's 1994 crime bill expanded penalty to 60 additional crimes, including espionage, treason, and drug trafficking. And Clinton returned the Cold War policies after the collapse of the Soviet Union by reneging on the Bush-Gorbachev agreement. And he set the tenor for the Russian tensions today, which Hillary now supports. He bombed a Sudanese pharmaceutical plant that Clinton claimed was making nerve agents, but British authorities found out it was just making medicine. Clinton doubled down on Iraq sanctions that crippled the economy, and 500,000 innocent Iraqi children died because of Bill and Hillary Clinton and Madeleine Albright. And he also denied intervention in Rwanda that led to 890,000 deaths. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of what the Clintons gave us. And you want more of that? Think again. You got Jill Stein. You got other people. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.